You're listening to Ithaca Now, WICB's weekly news program focused on stories in the Ithaca community. I'm your host, Sarah Payne, and thanks for joining us. On tonight's show, News Director George Christopher sits down with Common Council member Jorge DeFendini to discuss the solidarity slate and their candidates in the upcoming local elections. But first, we have myself and Liam McDermott with Community Beat and George Christopher with this week's Politics Beat. The community hero of this month's title has been given to Director of Enfield Food Distribution, Jane Owens. The Enfield Food Distribution helps provide food for over 600 families, and Owens' role involves her receiving and making orders, and she has been organizing the pantry too. She also works as a volunteer leader, so she is unpaid. Owens has served as the director of this organization since it was founded in the 80s. The nomination form submitted about Owens describes her as a generous person who cares about her community, makes everyone feel welcome, and is dedicated to providing access to food for those who are food insecure. Owens also noted that the award was a shock to her and gave credit to the 40 volunteers that help her at the pantry. Tompkins Community Bank President Greg Hart said of Owens' contributions that, quote, her work to make sure families have enough food is important, especially when so many are struggling while the economy continues to deal with challenges. People like Jean are what makes Tompkins County such a special place to live, end quote.
Ithaca resident William Marshall was sentenced to 20 years in prison on Friday in the July 2021 killing of Alan Godfrey. This comes as Marshall pleaded guilty to first-degree manslaughter in February. Marshall's defense team has argued that Godfrey was demanding money from Marshall's younger brother, who was disabled and was trying to take advantage of him. The judge presiding over the case, Joseph Cassidy, said at the sentencing that he understood how protective Marshall was being over his brother, but also expressed that it still doesn't excuse the fact that he killed Godfrey, saying that no one should be leaving the courtroom feeling anything but heartbroken.
On Wednesday, a man was arrested in relation to the Agava restaurant stabbing that occurred on February 26, 2020, in which two people were stabbed. Jamil C. Melton was indicted and arrested on charge of first-degree assault for the stabbing. On March 30th, after the Tompkins County District Attorney's Office showed the case to the jury returned with an indictment, and later on the 6th of this month, an arrest warrant was given to the Sheriff's Office, according to Sheriff Derek Osborne. Part of the long period of investigation arose from, quote, evidence processing and waiting on lab results, said Osborne. The Sheriff's Office commented that, quote, Melton was arraigned on Tompkins County Court and released by the judge under supervision of probation.
A horse in Caroline is being thanked for stopping a rabid fox earlier this month. The horse's owner says she heard something coming from her barn, and when she went to check it out, she saw a rabid fox trying to attack her horse. The woman said she quickly went to go grab her gun so she could shoot the fox, and when she had come back, the horse had fought off the fox. The horse was taken to the vet as a precaution and was cleared.
An Ithaca man that had been missing since February's body has been found. 65-year-old John Vandermark was last known to be seen on February 11th and was reported missing on February 14th. On Wednesday, it was reported by the Gratiot County Sheriff's Office that Vandermark's body was found in Hamilton Township around 1 p.m. An autopsy will be done to determine how he died, and there was no sign or implication of foul play.
Several members of the New York State Legislature are writing a letter to Governor Kathy Hochul asking her to deny New York State Electric and Gas, also known as NYSEG, and Rochester Gas and Electric from increasing gas and electricity rates, citing the major impact it would have on low-income residents. This comes as both companies have increased the price of electricity and gas by over 60% in the last 2 years. Both companies released a statement calling the letter, quote, cherry-picking. Hochul has not yet responded to the letter. For Community Beat, I'm Leah McDermott.
This is your weekly Politics Beat. I'm George Christopher. Josh Riley has announced he's running for Congress in the 19th District. According to the Ithaca Voice, Riley announced his campaign this week, setting up a potential rematch with Congressman Mark Molinaro, who defeated Riley in the 2022 midterms. Molinaro narrowly defeated Riley by just 1.5 points in a district that voted for Joe Biden by around 5 points in 2020. Riley is originally from Broome County, but relocated to Ithaca for his 2022 campaign. He previously worked as an attorney and as a Democratic staffer. Not long after his announcement, Riley announced a cross-endorsement with Ithaca mayoral candidate Robert Cantelmo. According to The Voice, the two candidates announced they would endorse each other's campaigns. Ken Tomo, an alderperson for the 5th Ward, is currently the only Democrat seeking the nomination for the November election. Viley has also received endorsements from Democratic county chairs across the 19th district, including in Tompkins County. Ithaca resident Jason Hofton has announced his campaign for the Common Council's 5th Ward two-year seat. Hofton becomes the second Democrat to launch his campaign in the district after Cornell student Clyde Lederman. Lederman has already received support from the New York Working Families Party. Reporting for Ithaca Now, I'm George Christopher.
You're listening to Ithaca Now. I'm your host, Sarah Payne. The Solidarity Slate, a collaboration of local progressive groups including the Working Families Party, the Ithaca Tenants Union, and the Ithaca chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, has become a major force in the city's left-wing politics. News director George Christopher sat down with Slate member and 4th Ward alderperson Jorge DeVendini to learn more about the Solidarity Slate and their goals and their candidates.
The Solidarity Slate has become a major force in city politics. In 2021, the group elected Jorge DeVendini in the 4th Ward and Phoebe Brown in the 2nd Ward. In 2022, the group helped Tiffany Kumar primary Patrick Mailer. Though Kumar is no longer officially a member of the Solidarity Slate, the group is now set to run more campaigns for the Common Council, announcing a slate of 5 candidates in the upcoming local elections. With Jorge DeVendini running for re-election in the 4th Ward and Phoebe Brown running in the 1st Ward, having to move seats due to redistricting, the slate will attempt to elect Kayla Matos in the 1st Ward, West Fox in the 2nd Ward, and Nathan Sitavaman in the 3rd Ward. Over the coming weeks, Ithaca Now will aim to cover these races specifically. We sat down with DeVendini to learn more about the slate and their candidates. This interview has been lightly edited for this broadcast.
Now, I guess my first question, what do you think separates the Solidarity Slate Council candidates from other candidates that are running?
I guess in a couple of phrases, I could say that we are very much policy over personality, communities over, like, community over corporations, community over, like, the individual. We believe that, you know, back when I was working on AOC's campaign back in 2018, one of her famous sayings was, they've got money and we've got people. And our strength lies in our numbers and, like, our lived experiences, and our collective, you know, organizing. And that is how we are going to win real substance change. It's not going to be by just electing the right people or coming up with a great plan that nobody has had before. It's our strength and our numbers in our community that separates the Solidarity Slate from the rest of, you know, folks doing politics here.
Well, you know, if, you know, you get all your candidates elected, you'll obviously be in a position to have, you know, half the council would be members of your slate. So obviously that puts you in a position to be pursuing much more legislative goals. So I guess my question is, what are the main legislative goals, policy goals of the Solidarity Slate?
A lot of it is continuing the work that we've advocated since trying to get onto council. In the realm of housing, we are very much in support of the Continuum of Care's Home Together Tompkins plan, which deals with homelessness, like those experiencing it in the jungle, in a humane and dignified way that puts housing first as a solution, with permanent supportive housing units being available to our unhoused neighbors. We don't believe in, like, folks having to get ready for housing or any of that nonsense. That folks, like, to solve homelessness, you need to put folks in homes and make sure that it can stay there. Second in the realm of housing is the Emergency Tenants Protection Act. It's a state-level legislation that we want the city of Ithaca to opt into. And if we do, some of the older, more larger building complexes in the city, West Village, Titus Towers, Chestnut, these buildings and these communities will be able to have a rent guidelines board that will oversee renting for them. And these, like, the most marginalized, typically low-income people of color, the elderly, might be able to enjoy rent control, which we desperately need in our community, especially for those folks. So that's what we want to do with housing. Of course, we want to return to the conversation that me and Ms. Phoebe started last year regarding reparations and seeing what we can do for the Black community here in Ithaca, funding Black institutions like Southside Community Center, and also trying to fight back gentrification by giving Black Ithacans the economic stability that they need to stay in and thrive in the communities that they've grown up in for generations. So that's what we want to do with reparations. We want to see a civilian accountability board that, you know, has that promotes actual legitimate civilian control over law enforcement, which is one of the biggest demands that came out of a lot of the Black Lives Matter movement across the country, but including here in Ithaca. So there's a lot that we want to do. And then, of course, we absolutely want to bring Cornell to the bargaining table in a more serious manner, because Cornell leaves a huge, huge hole in our budget. And only through having them actually be a good faith partner and inhabitant of the city and paying their fair share, we, A, reduce the burden on the rest of the taxpayers in this city, both renters and homeowners, but also do wonderful and essential things like increase the pay of our public workers, reverse the cuts that we've made to our bus services, even make the buses free, things of that regard, but only if we can bring Cornell to the table and make them pay their fair share.
Well, one thing you brought up is a civilian accountability board for regarding public safety. The report was the special committee report was just approved this past week or last week. How do you feel that report? How do you feel about that report? And how do you think the slate, if it has more members, will deal with that report being the sort of the basis for reform going forward?
Right. Well, it's in a sentence, I would say that reimagining public safety is the floor, not the ceiling. We did a lot of good work bringing our community together to talk about issues that have been plaguing Ithaca for decades now. And I'm very proud to have supported it, and I'm very grateful for the community members who had to relive trauma, share things that were uncomfortable and put in a lot of, unpaid labor into trying to make their community a better place, which is, of course, what the slate is trying to do in the grand scheme of things. And so I'm really supportive of a lot of the stuff that has been put in there, unarmed responders, the community justice center, community healing, things of that regard. But we need to go further. It's the floor, not the ceiling. And I think folks were a part of that, were aware of that. I don't think anybody was under the auspicions that we would just pass a couple of things and then that's it. We've solved, we fixed our criminal justice system and ended, systemic, marginalization or biases. No, that's not the case. And so we're going to be pushing for more unarmed responders. We're going to be pushing for, a civilian accountability board that has, powers and civilian control over our law enforcement. We're going to keep pushing for criminal justice reform because, as I mentioned, it's not about the right or perfect plan that's going to solve a lot of our systemic issues. Systemic problems require systemic solutions.
Okay. Tell me about the Ithaca Green New Deal. You on the website for the slate, you talk about sort of that the goals of the Green New Deal hasn't really been pursued in a sort of concrete way. So, what kind of legislative goals do you think the slate would pursue in order to make the commitments of the Green New Deal more concrete?
I'm very interested in overseeing how we're going to carbon retrofit all of our buildings. And in particular, how we are going to thread this needle of carbon retrofitting and making our buildings, have a net zero carbon emission without having that burden fall onto the taxpayer, particularly the renter, whose buildings might be receiving these renovations. And then suddenly they have, landlords coming in saying, oh, well, now we've had to pay for these renovations or get these renovations done. Your rent is now this much higher. We're not going to be greenwashing gentrification or anything like that in our city. And so making sure that we take, for me, what I've always found is important about to remember about the Green New Deal, whether here in Ithaca or across the country, is that Green New Deal is a pair of glasses, the pair of lens through which to look at economic and social development. So if you're going to be making reforms, police reform, housing reform, economic development and growth reform, you need to do this with a climate lens through it. We can't just be building or growing or fixing for the sake of doing these things. We also have to keep the climate catastrophe in mind as well. And so that's what the Green New Deal is about, moving forward in progress with a climate orientation. And, you know, that's why Justice 50, an aspect of the Green New Deal, is something that very much interests me. It talks about how we can make these climate investments in these climate communities, these marginalized, low-income Black, Brown, Indigenous groups that are on the front lines of climate change and have the fewest economic resources to combat it. So how are we going to step up and help them fight this battle as well?
I guess my next question is about sort of how the slate, you know, operates as an organization, as a political sort of group. Why is Tiffany Kumar not considered a member of the slate as she was last year?
Well, we already put out a statement regarding Tiffany no longer being a part of the Solidarity slate. And I'm not going to, you know, deter or detract too much from that, nor am I going to speak over the decision of the organizations, because that's not how we operate. And so you're welcome to reach out to them for comment on that regard. But the statement is there online for you to read through. But that doesn't change the fact that we still have, you know, I believe, me personally speaking, have a very good relationship with Tiffany. We caucus together. And we work on legislation together. She's supportive of a lot of the same things that that we're moving forward with. There were just, you know, differences in approach to strategy, I believe, at the end of the day. But in terms of your broader question of, like, how the slate makes organizational decisions or whatnot, these grassroots community organizations like Ithaca DSA and the Tenants Union and the Working Families Party come together. Sitting down with folks like myself who are electeds, who are community organizers, and we try to put together policies that we think are going to advance progress and that are going to address the needs of the most marginalized folks, because we come from those communities. We come from tenant communities. We come from Black and Brown communities, from communities that are going to be, you know, disproportionately impacting climate change, all of these.
Okay, and I think you kind of answered it there, but you still view Councillor Kumar as an ally on the council.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What was the thought process in terms of where you decided to field candidates? Was it just a matter of there were these candidates who we felt that were already running and we are aligned with them? Was it, you know, was there more thought in terms of this district might be more interested in a Solidarity slate candidate? What was the sort of,
right,
what was the thought process in that?
I mean, I think there's been a bit of both, right? I think there are some folks who decide to throw their hat in the race that, you know, approached us and say, I think we align, I myself align with the Solidarity slate. I'd love to get more involved with your organizations, and we've worked with them in the past and whatnot. I think, you know, Kayla is a wonderful example of this, as somebody who decided that she wanted to run for Common Council after you know, the previous budget session at Common Council, and has done tremendous work her entire life with Southside Community Center and other organizations throughout the community. And this was an opportunity for her to get more involved with our organizations, the Solidarity slate as well, and we're very experienced with campaigning and whatnot in the city and political organizing. And so so that's how she became a part of that. But in other situations, we had folks where, you know, we you know, in a place like Ward 2, we think it's a very, you know, progressive ward or what have you, and folks wanted to step up and help out in that ward, and we believed that it was an opportunity to really, you know, expand on our ideals and make sure that folks representing Common Council reflected, you know, the progressive values of the people in those populations, and, you know, putting someone forward in that regard.
This will be the second time that the slate has attempted to primary Cynthia Brock. Do you view her as an impediment to your legislative goals?
I think Alderperson Brock has come, on the opposite end of a lot of issues with the Solidarity slate. Reparations comes to mind recently. In some instances, I'm not going to doubt that we haven't worked together, well on some things. The Starbucks resolution she was very helpful with, and as an example. But at the end of the day, what differentiates the Solidarity slate from any other type of common counselor, again, comes to our approach, where it's policies over personality, and trying to take a collective approach, and mass mobilizing our communities to see change, as opposed to trying to find the right solution, how to do things. Or, there's been a lot of, I feel, in common counsel, a lot of deference to the rules and procedures, the process for how we do stuff. Fact of the matter is, common counsel is not made for somebody like myself, for somebody like Ms. Phoebe. These government systems were not designed with us in mind, and so when we enter them, they need to shape around us, as opposed to us conforming for them, because those systems have not been representative of our communities since their founding. And so that's why we're getting involved in politics, to change them, to fight the systemic issues there. And there are a lot of folks who are more interested in management and preserving things as they are, with tweaks to systems here and there. And, for us, I think the question is, you're either going to be part of the solution or you're going to be part of the problem.
Well, I guess my question then is about the candidates that you have running. Tell me about Kayla Matos. Just generally, who is she? Why do they want to get involved? And why should people in the first ward be looking at her candidacy?
I'll answer these questions the best of my ability, but I strongly recommend reaching out to these folks as well. I'm doing my best to speak on behalf of individuals, but I don't want to speak over them. And so I definitely recommend reaching out. I think they're very accessible, all the other candidates at this time right now, and they're looking to do this type of media outreach. But I'll take my best swing at it. So Kayla is, an Ithacan who has been doing great community organizing work, and she was inspired by Miss Phoebe, who joined the Solidarity slate with me last year. And she feels that Ms. Phoebe paved the road for a lot of ways to run for common council. And she's been doing a lot of the same grassroots community work in her own community in Southside, downtown, for quite some time. And it's phenomenal work. And I think she's coming at this from the argument of, the city spends, thousands, if not millions of dollars investing in X, Y, Z, instead of funding the institutions that are actively doing public safety, that are actively doing housing justice, that are actively doing racial and economic justice, things of that regard. And I think you got a firsthand view to seeing how, we are very much about rules and procedures and process over progress a lot of the times on council. At the last budget session, when she came with very reasonable and common sense, in my opinion, requests for, funding for Southside Community Center, an initiative that they were undertaking that were addressing a lot of issues that the city was very concerned about at the time, including homelessness populations and whatnot, and community healing and economic development. And she saw that, things didn't go that way. And I think that really motivated her to run, so that we can try and make common council see that there are groups that are already doing this, that they need the support of the city government to actually thrive in doing so.
Okay. I will reach out to some of the other folks going forward you have on the slate. But if you could give, an elevator pitch for sort of Mr.
Sure,
Sidavaman and West Fox as well, what are their sort of, if you had to, describe them briefly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in the case of Nathan is a postdoc who was a part of the grad student union at Cornell early on. He got involved in wanting, he's a physicist, and he wanted to, you know, become a scientist and work on advancing science and technology for the betterment of mankind. But as he mentioned in his speech last week, he realizes that there's a ceiling and a restraint on that, and how far we can go in progress if we do not also organize for our collective demands and for the collective well-being of all. Science or progress for the sake of science and growth are not going to save us, but only we are going to save us. I also think his time at Cornell was very eye-opening, you know, some would say radicalizing experience, where he saw firsthand how himself as an undergraduate and then a graduate student, despite the fact that Cornell takes so much from Ithaca, it doesn't redistribute it adequately enough to its population on campus. And he grew up in a college town, and he saw that, you know, a better option or a better alternative is possible, and that Cornell is just being, in particular, I mean, greedy is the word that comes to mind, and not redistributing a lot of the wealth that Ithaca, to Ithaca, that the city makes possible for it. And I think that's motivated him to run after seeing that us on the Solidarity Slate were pushing for the same calls and asks that he wants to see, you know, during his time at Cornell. In the case of West, West has lived, you know, around the country in New York, in Los Angeles, and as a, you know, non-binary trans Afro-Puerto Rican, like, they've really seen and been a part of a lot of these marginalized communities, and seen how different responses from communities and government can really shape how positive or negative, you know, quality of life outcomes are. And so they've been unhoused and they've been homeless. They've seen what community centric and healing and housing first solutions can really you know, benefit somebody. And they've also seen, you know, what the opposite can do, like believing that we need to get folks ready for housing and whatnot. And they want to, they also see that Common Council doesn't reflect, in terms of identity and experience, a lot of what the average average everyday Ithacan does. You know, me and Miss Phoebe and Tiffany are three tenants on a council of 10 in a city that is 75% tenant. That doesn't make any sense. Me and we do have a little bit more of a diverse common council than some other places. It's still predominantly white. And it's still predominantly cishet and straight. And right now we're seeing a lot of folks with those identities making, you know, horrendous and, I'll say it, genocidal policy suggestions across the country, not here in Ithaca, but across the country. And we would benefit from having more of those experiences on Common Council. And they're also a very well-studied, you know, student of philosophy and government. And I think that's something that we could really benefit from here on Common Council.
Well, you brought it up right there. You know, I think that the other night I was listening to a, I don't know if you've seen it, but there was a clip from a Florida State legislator calling some trans people who had attended a meeting demons and imps. Part of me deep down wanted to sort of laugh at it and, you know, make fun of it, but, you know, I just couldn't. It was too disturbing to mock it. And I thought of, you know, my friends in that community and stuff like that. So my question is, how can the Common Council, what has the Common Council done, and what can it continue to do or do completely new to make it a good place that is? So we know these policies, you know, that's down there in Florida, but, you know, these policies can, you know, become very quickly, they can become things that affect everybody. How
Absolutely.
Can Ithaca be a sort of sanctuary for those types of communities?
Right. I think you said it right there, and I think we've taken some good steps in the right direction. I appreciate, you know, back in 2018, I believe, or 16, one of the two, we made Ithaca a sanctuary city, that we wouldn't work with bounty hunters and federal agencies that were looking for undocumented residents. That was a good thing. Alderperson Kellen Telmo, I was very gracious to sign on and support his, I believe it was an ordinance to make Ithaca an abortion sanctuary, where similarly, same parameters just in the case of working with those groups on the issues of folks seeking an abortion in places where, coming from places where that might be illegal. I think that's a good step, and I think we should extend that. I would love to consider making an amendment to that ordinance for folks who are trying to receive trans-affirming health care or gender-affirming health care if it's not currently in there already. I have to take a look. It possibly might be, but if it's not, I believe that's, you know, it's necessary that we include that. And this past previous Common Council meeting, I used my privilege of the floor to speak about these issues that are happening around us. I think here in Ithaca, there are two bubbles in Ithaca. There's the bubble surrounding the city and the bubble surrounding Cornell University. So that's why when you speak to folks out of town or even in town off of campus, you can get a very different telling of how things are or a different perspective. And so as much as we can to like pierce through that bubble and make it out into, you know, the greater public channels of communication and talk, the better. And using our, we on the Common Council, sometimes it feels like we're powerless, but we do have power and we do have a certain position and privilege, and we ought to use that to advance this. You know, there, I believe for a while now, there's been this culture of Common Council being more of a social club where we manage, you know, the systems and institutions that be instead of trying to really advance progress and advance change for those who are marginalized. And so that's what I'm fighting for in Common Council with Solidarity Slate, and I'm going to continue to use my platform as long as they keep seeing these. And we have to start calling them what they are. These are fascists who are in the government, who are agitating, whether they're on the PTA board, you know, of a local, you know, Florida or Tennessee city, or, you know, they're sitting in Congress or the Senate, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Ted Cruz, who are calling for trans genocide. That's what this is. It's a genocide. This is dehumanizing language. Look at the playbooks of fascists in Germany and Italy and across the world in history. Look at what the United Nations and the Geneva Convention says about dehumanization and fascist rhetoric and fascist strategies. Look at this stuff and call it out for what it is, because, you know, if we just wait for it to be relevant to us, to, you know, Latinos, to cishet folks, to just simply bi, gay, or lesbian folks, you know, they're going to come for us eventually, and then no one will be left to speak for us. And so, again, our strength is in our numbers and our collectiveness and our community, and we need to use the positions that we have in government to not lose track of that.
Okay. And my final question, you and Phoebe Brown have been on the council now for 2 years. What do you think you guys have learned in those 2 years?
I think we've gotten, you know, more experience in how the day-to-day operations of government works, how to make changes and how to, you know, work in tandem with colleagues who might agree, who might not agree, who want like changes here or there before they could sign on, things like that. And I think we've gotten a lot of experience, you know, in connecting with our community on certain issues and how to be both proactive on some issues and reactive in other issues as they come up. And I think one of the beautiful things about Solidarity Slate is the fact that we've gone through that means that our cohorts who are joining us won't have to take that crash course the hard way, and that we can work with them and help them learn this before they are thrust into the frying pan, so to speak. And you know, that really moves along progress, because every time a new council comes on board, there's this huge learning curve where you're sort of putting down tracks as you're driving the train, and that can really hurt, you know, the progress on certain things or how we operate, you know, day to day. But if folks are familiar and know this stuff from the jump, we can really shave off a lot of time and really work on delivering the changes that we promise. And I think that that's going to be a strength that we have, you know, when we win these elections going into next year. I'm hoping that you'll see a faster turnaround than you might have in previous iterations of council.
Okay. Now, I want to give you a chance if you have any final statements you want to put on the record for my story in terms of the slate and your goals, anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say that, like, I'm one member of the Solidarity Slate, and, you know, we don't have, you know, we're a collective political projects, and we're really working to reshape and redefine how communities on the local level do politics. And so you'll hear something from me, and you'll hear something, you know, similar but a little different and with a different perspective from others. And that's not, you know, a discontinuity, or that's not a paradox or a contradiction, but that's the reality of doing collective politics. And that's something that I think, you know, us in the United States need to get a lot more comfortable with.
That's all for this week's Ithaca Now. You can listen to all of our stories on WICB.org. And if you'd like to listen to past shows, follow WICB on SoundCloud and subscribe to Ithaca Now to hear the show anywhere, anytime. Also subscribe to the latest to hear our daily newscast every weekday. Just search WICB News Presents on your favorite podcast app. For more updates throughout the week, follow WICB News on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. This show wouldn't happen without the support and assistance from Manager of Television and Radio Operations, Jeremy Menard, WICB Manager Connor Hibbard, and Programming Director Harrison Kona. Thank you. Ithaca Now is produced by News Director George Christopher, with assistance from News Production Director Liam McDermott, with our Web Coordinator Inbayini Ambarasan, and Social Media Coordinator Chess Cabrera. All of the music from our show's intro and outro comes from Dr. Gundrick of Louisville, Kentucky. Have any feedback, story ideas, just want to say hi? Feel free to reach out by emailing news@wicb.org. We will be back with a full episode of Ithaca Now at 7 p.m. next Sunday.